Welcome in to the New Orleans Saints podcast. You'll hear from players, coaches, broadcasters, and writers that cover the NFL on a daily basis. The New Orleans Saints podcast starts right now. Here's your host, Aaron Summers.
Welcome into the New Orleans Saints podcast. I'm Aaron Summers. We are wrapping up our look around the NFC South with the Tampa Bay Bucks today. We are talking to Scott Smith. He is a senior writer and editor for Tampa Bay at Buccaneers.com. He joins John DeShazer and I shortly. The Bucks have 7 picks. Their first pick is not until number 26 in the first round. However, they do have 4 picks in the top 100. The Bucks made some big moves in free agency, re-signing several players, starting with wide receiver Mike Evans, quarterback Baker Mayfield, that helped solidify their team, give them a little more direction as far as what they're looking for in the upcoming draft. Scott breaks everything down for us. He joins us now. Scott, thank you so much for joining us on the New Orleans Saints podcast. Fellow NFC South opponent here as you're with the Bucks. How are you doing leading up to draft week?
Oh, I just can't wait for it to be here, really. We've been doing a lot of draft coverage through the last couple months, a number of mock drafts, and after a while it gets to be a little bit of repeating the same stuff over and over again. So, and then you get to the actual draft and it doesn't go any way the way you expected after the first I love the draft weekend. It's a lot of hours, as you guys know, but it's one of my favorite times of the whole year. I just think the whole experience is great.
Well, I assume for you on that side of things, you've gone 4 years without a top 15 pick in Tampa Bay. So there's a lot of variables that come into play before the Bucks will get their first pick at 26. How much does that affect who they may get or a position they're looking for?
Yeah, obviously every time another pick goes that you didn't expect, it compounds those variables. And when you're all the way down to 26, it's really hard to predict. But Jason Light, our general manager, did say at his pre-draft press conference that he thought they had 5 to 7 players that they thought had a shot to get to 26, or at least in the range if you wanted to make a short move up. And at the NFL owners meetings, when he was discussing our trade of Carlton Davis to the Lions, which netted a 3rd-round pick, he was talking about how valuable that pick could be. But his word choice was pretty interesting because he said, we can get younger either with the player we pick there or using it as ammo to make a move. So I don't think he wants to give up draft assets, especially day two picks. But his history has shown that if there's a guy that they really want and it's close, he'll make that move just to go up. So I could see him do that for a guy if that list of 5 to 7 is getting pretty slim.
Yeah. How likely do you think that there will be movement that maybe you guys move up or back?
Yeah, I think it all depends on how that list goes. Like I said, he's shown repeatedly that he's willing to make that move, a small one, you know, 2 or 3 picks. But he's also made comments to make it clear he'd rather not. So a trade down, which we did just a couple of years ago to the 33rd pick and then took Logan Hall, you know, if you get to 26 and 4 or 5 of those 5 to 7 players are still there, a trade down makes a ton of sense. If there's somebody looking to move up to get, maybe somebody finally decides it's time to go after Michael Penix or Bo Nix or somebody like that. So I could definitely see that.
Scott, what position's on the wish list?
You know, it's funny because sometimes, especially when you're picking late, you see all these mock drafts and you see predictions and you say, no, come on, there's no way. I think we got us nailed this year because I've been tracking mock drafts since the beginning of February and keeping them in a spreadsheet. And it's pretty clear that everybody thinks we're going to take either an interior offensive lineman, possibly a tackle that could have some versatility, an edge rusher, or a cornerback. And there's a few that'll go wide receiver. I think that's absolutely correct. I think that's absolutely the positions we're looking for on day one and day two. We don't have a starter at left guard right now. There's some real nice value. And our center, Robert Hainsey, is flexible enough so you can take a center or a guard and plug them right into the starting lineup. And some of the tackles that are going on in the first round in these mock drafts also have some guard flexibility too. And then edge rusher, we released Shaq Barrett, who's been our best edge rusher for the last 5 years for cap reasons. And, our sack leader last year was a 3rd-round rookie named Yaya Diaby, who had 7.5. It's pretty clear. And the good thing about taking an edge rusher is it doesn't really matter if you have starters. You can get them in the rotation right away. So I think edge rusher to me is what I would be hoping. And I'm not saying I know what Jason Light's going to do, but that's what I personally would be hoping for. But there's not as many of them. So I'm not sure that one of the top ones is going to make it to 26.
Now you mentioned receiver. Is it imperative or you know, not to get one? Because I understand, obviously, Mike Evans and you know is getting a little bit older and whatnot, but he just re-signed. So, you know, it's one of those positions where, you know, I guess you wouldn't have to have immediate help, but also it would also help to have help.
Yeah, I don't think it's imperative, but I do think they would like to get one. You know, our third receiver last year was essentially Trey Palmer, six-round rookie from Nebraska, and his speed really made a lot of difference, and his numbers were pretty good for a third-round receiver, but you also don't see that he affected a lot of other coverages and routes and really helped, you know, open up space for Mike and Chris. But he's still a little, you know, he's a six-round second-year player. He's still a little unpolished. He had some drops. They could sit pat and really feel fairly confident that he can handle that third receiver role. But they could also potentially look to get another guy there that maybe has a little more juice. And beyond those three guys, the receiving corps is pretty inexperienced. So again, like edge rusher, I think if they did take a receiver, they could definitely find a way to play him right away.
Now you mentioned edge rusher. If it's not a day one guy for edge rusher, can you get the guy that you want later? Because generally there's a premium on such players.
Couldn't agree with you more, which is what made the hit on Yaya Diaby in the third round last year such a big one, because I mean, I can go back through our history, and if our best edge rushers have always either been first round picks or free agents like Simeon Rice. I just think it's really hard to find an impact pass rusher outside the first round and usually outside the top half of the first round. But it can be done. We did it with Yaya Diaby last year, but to be honest with you, they admitted midway through the season that the main reason they chose Yaya in the third round is they thought at the very least he was going to be a plus run defender. If he gave you something in the pass rush, great, but that wasn't necessarily the expectation. But then he did. So it was a real home run. But this draft, I think there's a couple guys in the second round that seem interesting, like Adisa Isaac of Penn State, who really was actually more productive than Chop Robinson, who's probably going to go in the first round. I think you could maybe find one in the second round. I'm not sure about after that.
Hey, how much, and this is not draft related, I guess, but how much has Baker Mayfield kind of helped that organization? Because he seems to be a guy who as players will say, he's got that dog in him. He's got the juice. And he seems to, like, you know, lift all boats around him.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. You would not believe the level of affection that the people in this building have for that guy. He won over this whole building, the locker room, but also everybody. He's awesome. We love him. And we were so happy that Jason Light was able to find a way, and Mike Greenberg and everybody that works with him was able to find a way to get him a new deal here. I think he possibly could have made a little bit more somewhere else, but he seems to really love it here. He gave him a chance to revive his career, and they believed in him and gave him that shot, and it worked. And I his attitude, his leadership, it's off the charts. The guy's incredible.
Was that kind of priority number one when you did hit free agency?
Maybe 1A, 1B. The first guy we re-signed was Mike Evans. And both of those guys said, as they started to get those questions near the end of the season, if I'm back, I want the other one back. You know, Baker said, if I'm back, I want Mike back. And you could understand why. So Mike was the very first guy we got done. And then about 4 days later, we got Baker done. I don't think that was a coincidence. They're probably both waiting to see. I think Baker told a story that they actually talked to each other on the phone a few days before that all went down and said, are we getting this done or not? So they were concerned about each other's status. And so that was probably 1A and 1B. And just as important, especially in terms of leadership and what he means in this building, was Levante David.
And then throughout the rest of free agency, I saw that GM Jason Leck said that he really felt like you guys hit a home run as far as solidifying some needs there. Do you think it was the best, you know, signing period that you guys have had in a while?
Well, we've done pretty good in the last few years, especially in the Super Bowl era. That was when we were signing all kinds of guys and really doing a lot of the contracts that pushed the hit. You guys know well about that, that pushes the hit of the to the salary cap down the road a little bit, and you have to pay for it later. We did a lot of that during the Super Bowl year, but I think what Jason was getting at in one of the press conferences where he talked about this was, if you didn't say what the team was, but said this team signed Baker Mayfield coming off a great year, Levante David coming off a great year, Mike Evans, who's Mike Evans, and a kicker who had the best season of any kicker we've ever had in team history, And you got Antoine Winfield, because we have him on the franchise tag. If you said, hey, this team just signed these five players, people would be raving about that. free agency class. And that was kind of his point. Yeah, there are guys, but it was really critical to get those guys, and it's a great haul. And then the other signings from outside were more, I think, about flexibility. You know, like I said, we don't have a left guard right now, but we signed two guards, Ben Bredesen and Sua Opeta. And we traded Carlton Davis, as I said before, so we need some cornerback depth. So we signed Bryce Hall from the Jets and Tavier Thomas from the Texans. And then we also signed Randy Gregory pretty recently. So those are all the spots where people think we're going to draft, but you give yourself a little flexibility there so you don't have to force it to edge if there's not an edge there, because you got Randy Gregory. And if you don't have to force it at guard because you got some options there and so on. So I think that was the main point of making those signings. But, you know, we did need depth at a number of positions, and Jason has said it himself. He's like, there's a lot of needs. We have a lot of needs. Even now, still going into the draft, he said, I never heard anybody put it this way before, but it was kind of interesting. He said, we have a lot of needs, but that may be a good thing, because we almost made it to the NFC Championship game last year. We were tied going into the fourth quarter in Detroit. And he thinks the roster this year can be better than last year. So I get his point there. But, yeah, they did a good job of filling in some of the holes in the depth chart, but there's still some work to be done.
No, not exactly what we want to hear, that better this next year. But I understand what he is saying. As far as going down later rounds in the draft, positions, depth, you know, maybe something that you would like to see the team do.
I think they could use to pick up another running back, maybe in the third, fourth round. I was just actually listening to a podcast about the draft, and they were pointing out some guys that could really be good values in the fourth round. So, you know, that's one spot. I always say, and I will always believe, that you can never have enough quality cornerback depth. And Jason Light and his crew have shown a real good ability to pick good corners in the second and third round. And then we even got Zion McCollum in the fifth round a few years ago. So I think they could probably find a corner. And you know, another thing that I think is going to be a bit of an emphasis, more so this year in the third day, is what can these guys possibly bring on special teams? Because that new kickoff return rule and kickoff coverage, the whole kickoff process is going to change things. And I think it's going to change the types of players that they want. I know Jason has mentioned, he said it's going to be more like an offensive play. And so you might want bigger guys, or you might want faster guys or whatever. And then also, does this corner you're looking at in the fifth round have return ability? Because you're going to need some more return options. We basically had one guy take all of our punt and kickoff returns for the whole season last year, Devin Tompkins. And while he was good, I think you're going to need several returners, because especially on kickoff, you could put two of them deep to you know, try to make it harder for the kicking team to kick away from your return man. So I think special teams concerns, both in terms of coverage and blocking, and also do they have any return ability, could color some of our decisions on day three.
Yeah, that's something the Saints are addressing in terms of return, because Rashid Shaheed's here, but you're going to have another one, because you do have the new kickoff rule and all that. So, Scott, we're going to ask you I'm going to ask you to put on your GM hat, not to name a player, but I guess a position that you would take with the first pick.
Okay, I've done a few mock drafts. The most recent one I did, is what I'll go with. And it's honestly, if I could have my hopes, and again, this has nothing to do with, I don't have any idea how Jason and his people feel about this guy. You said I don't have to name a guy. I would love it if we got Leiatu Latu, the edge rusher. I love the guys that have production. Yeah, I mean, Chop Robinson and a lot of these guys have, and they're probably going to be great. They tested off the roof, but they didn't have the same level of production as this guy. However, when I'm doing mock drafts now, those guys aren't making it to 26. So I think where there's probably going to be value for the Buccaneers is going to be interior offensive line. And in my last mock draft, I went with Jackson Powers Johnson, the center from Oregon, who I think would play right away. But a Graham Barton, Zach Frazier, those interior offensive linemen, I think, is probably where the value is going to be. Maybe even trade back and still get one of those guys. And so that would be my prediction. Not any inside knowledge, just my prediction.
Well,
I'm trying to make that clear in case anybody on my team.
They come blaming you for picks and what happens and doesn't happen. No, but your GM did say that he thought that you needed help in the trenches on both sides.
That's right.
So it makes sense as you would go offensive line and tier offensive line to start. As far as last season goes, were you surprised with how well the team ended up clicking and doing as the season went on?
I would say no. I'll rewind it back to last summer when we had signed Baker Mayfield, because we won a competition and a probable starter after the retirement of Tom Brady. To put it mildly, the national media was not impressed. And they And every time you read a prediction of how the Bucks would do in 2023, it generally was not very optimistic, but the copy would say, hey, this team still has a lot of talent. They still have a lot of the defensive players that started in the Super Bowl a few years ago. They have great receivers. They have a lot of talent, but they don't have a quarterback. And my argument at the time was, well, if we do have a quarterback, then you should be saying we're going to be good. So if you're wrong about Baker, then the rest of your report should add up to, hey, they're still going to be good. And I pointed out at the time, yeah, Baker bounced around for a few years and had some struggles and honestly, some not great situations that he was in, but we have seen him perform at the level he performed last year. He did it in 2020 and he took the Browns to the playoffs, won a playoff game at very close stats to what he had this year, although they were a little better this year. So we've seen him do it. So why is it so crazy to think that he could do it? And that's, you know, our head coach Todd Bowles loved him, wanted to get him and thought he could do it. And they were right. So I know most people were surprised that the Buccaneers won the division last year. We were not as surprised, although I will say when we lost 6 of 7 and dropped to 4 and 7 on the season, it didn't look too bright at that point. So it was a little surprising to win 5 if you got to play out 6 of your last 7 games. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Looking at the NFC South, what people have done already, how do you think it's going to shake out this year?
Well, I'm sure you guys have seen the same thing. It's the Falcons get Kirk Cousins and they're immediately the favorites, right? Because everybody loves a lot of things on that roster, but they didn't have a quarterback. I never count out the Saints, and I'm not trying to kiss up, but I never do because historically had struggles with the Saints, and they've I think I'm accurate when I'm saying this. There have been a lot of salary cap gymnastics that you've had to go through year after year, and every year I keep waiting for the bottom to bottom out, and it doesn't seem to happen. I mean, I know you haven't won the division in a few years, but you had won them a lot before that. I still think the Saints are going to be good. I think it's probably pretty accurate that the Falcons improved 2, 3, 4 wins by getting Kirk Cousins. And then in Carolina, I love their new head coach, obviously. He was great here. But until I see that Bryce Young really is the real deal, it's hard to project that they'll be great. Mm-hmm. This is the way I look at it. So I think it could be a dogfight. Everybody thinks that, and it's always this way when a division goes down. Like I remember a few years back, the NFC West kind of bottomed out for a while. And I think somebody wanted it 7-9, and everybody just assumes that that division is also going to stink next year. And that's not the way it works in the NFL. It's very, you guys know, it's very cyclical. So, you know, did anybody think that the an NFC or AFC South was going to have an awesome Houston team and a Jacksonville team that probably should have done a little bit better? I don't think so. And they were better than people expected. So I think that the NFC South collectively will be a little bit better than what people are expecting right now. But yeah, there's a lot of X factors, Kirk Cousins and Bryce Young and so on. So we'll see. I'm optimistic, I guess.
Ooh, we just talked to Jake DeLoma. He was very high on Bryce Young. He thinks he's going to be a lot better this year. So we'll see if that pans out. But how tough was it to lose Canales to the Panthers?
Yeah, that's as Coach Bowles has said, Sean Payton told him, hey, the silver lining is it means you're picking the right guys when you're losing them like that. And it is tough to go, you know, nobody knew if he was going to be hitting the job. And honestly, he's such an open guy and his press conferences were very introspective and he would answer questions in great detail and talk about his process. And he would tell us as the season was going on where he was getting better, what he hadn't done well. But I mean, as the season went on, I mean, he really started getting, I think, in a groove in terms of play calling. Yeah, so you would have liked to have seen that momentum carry forward. And we're very happy about the guy we got now, Liam Cohen, and think he can probably keep a lot of the continuity of the way we ran our offense with some tweaks, obviously. So I think it was a good landing for us. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's bittersweet because you love the guy. He's an awesome dude, and you're happy he got what was his dream job that he's been dreaming about for years. But, you know, it's not great for us.
Well, we've lost a couple of coordinators to the opposition as well over the years. So we feel the pain there.
You know, now, Scott, I guess the interesting thing, if the offense doesn't change, how does it change, I guess, relationship-wise? Because obviously he established relationships with the offense.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see how that goes because he did do a good job of that. And you know, you look at the year before in Seattle with Geno Smith, and then with us, with Baker Mayfield, you can see why the Panthers wanted to get him to work with Bryce Young. So now, yeah, you have a new guy that has to establish those relationships. And I think the other thing you're probably going to see is a really much bigger emphasis on trying to get this run game fixed because we've been last in the league in both carries, I mean yards, and also yards per carry for two straight years. Now, found a way to make the offense work anyway, but I know they want to be more balanced. Liam Cohen has talked about that a lot. Dave Canales wanted to run the ball. And in fact, I think we were 10th or 11th in a percentage of carries on first and 10. So that's a team that wants to run the ball. And at times was doing enough with it that even though the numbers weren't there, and they got better as the season went along, even though the numbers weren't there, it was still helping you maintain a little bit of balance. I think Liam Cohen actually wants to see more production, and that's going to be a major point of emphasis, which is another reason why maybe we should take an offensive lineman in the first round.
Which was you made it obvious that that is your pick.
That's what everybody thinks you guys are doing too, right? A tackle?
Yeah.
That's what all the mock drafts say.
Yeah, I think we could use one or two as well.
Well, draft for it. It's a great draft if that's what you need.
That's true. There is a lot of depth at that position, which bodes well. Maybe we can all get one.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Scott. I appreciate it so much. And I guess good luck to you guys in the draft, and we'll see you down the line here.
Well, yeah, thank you for having me. Good luck to you too. Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Scott. Thank you.
Appreciate Scott joining us, telling us everything about the Bucks heading into next week's NFL draft. It is April 25th through 27th. And don't forget, day three, we are doing a watch party, huge event thrown by the Saints at Manning's from 12 to 3. So make sure you get out there. There's going to be Saints legends there. There'll be some Q&A sessions. You'll have a chance to meet some of them and just get to hang out with fellow Saints fans as we watch the third day of the draft. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's always a great week. And then we'll really get going as rookie mini camp will start. OTAs. The Saints players have been back in the building as offseason workouts started on Monday, so it's been fun seeing some of the guys around the building working out together. There have been a lot of players that have showed up, which I think is a great sign considering they don't have to. It is all voluntary, and they're here spending time together, working on their bodies, working on their craft, and just really getting excited for the upcoming season. We can't wait, and next week we'll get to welcome in some new Saints players. Thank you so much for joining me this week as we broke down the NFC South. Really looking forward to the draft, and of course, we will get an in-depth look at what we think the Saints are doing on the Saints podcast next week before the draft kicks off on Thursday.
Thanks for listening to the New Orleans Saints podcast. Join us three times per week on NewOrleansSaints.com, the Saints mobile app, or you can download the podcast on iTunes. We'll see you next time, right here on the New Orleans Saints podcast.